This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Welcome back to another edition of Pistons Thoughts. I'm your host, Jordan Letterman. It's been a long summer away from each other, but we're back. And it's time to talk Pistons. It's time to talk NBA. This summer's been crazy. And today, we got a special guest, Tyler Dunn, an old friend of mine. He's an ambassador of MUF Chicago, lifelong basketball guy, lifelong Heat fan. Tyler, welcome to the show.
Pretty good to be here, J-Man. Talking the NBA, talking Detroit basketball. I spent all my years in college here, nothing about the Pistons, and now we get to talk about it on a podcast, so it's going to be awesome.
Absolutely. So let's just jump right into it. The Pistons have been busy. The NBA has been busy. Let's start with the Pistons. I know you're not a diehard Pistons guy like me. You might not follow them as closely, but I'd love to get some thoughts on the small moves that I think are going to make a huge difference. It started with the Pistons trading away John Lohr and his absolute dead money for Tony Snell and a first-round pick.
As somebody that likes Tony Snell's game, you know, seeing him play for the Bulls while I was an employee for the said Chicago Bulls, got to see Tony Snell on a day-to-day basis, I think that's a really good pickup.
I mean, especially coming from the Pistons, who literally ended last season with no small forwards on their team.
Yeah, that was kind of an issue, especially when we got to the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, not that Tony Snell really would have done too much more to stop Giannis, but, I mean, when you're looking at a team playing the Greek Freak and Chris Middleton and all that size, the Pistons just had none of it. So, at the very least, Tony Snell gives you a competent small forward who can hit some threes, play some defense, give you some length, and he's a good professional.
Absolutely. He's dependable, you know, good guy in the locker room. You mention it, especially in today's NBA, you got to be able to hit those three-point shots. And he may even add that Lance Stevenson kind of pizzazz, and next time you play Giannis, maybe he will blow in his ear. You never know.
You know, I'll take it. And a lot of people in Detroit would. But it's interesting. I mean, he's sort of the perfect small forward to throw into the Pistons' current starting lineup as is, because you don't need another shot creator unless it's an all-star level shot creator. You just need someone who can play some defense, stand in the corner, hit some threes, you know, give some dribble handoff motion with Blake, and just, you know, just sort of stay out of the way, but also can pick their spots and score when they can.
Absolutely, especially with Blake. We've always talked about it from back in our college days with our buddy Joey, you know, who's a big, huge Blake Griffin fan. He's a point forward, and always the issue with him and Chris Paul.
Yeah.
That both of them like to have the ball in their hand, and both of them are all-star creators. And there's just sometimes, you know, those kind of chemistries didn't really match up. Obviously, when Blake does his appearances on his favorite podcast, which should be this one, but he does other appearances.
We'll get him
eventually. You can tell that there was animosity there, but now that he's the guy in Detroit, he's loved in Detroit, people love to have that superstar like Blake Griffin, and he kind of got back to that all-star form last season, and with that creativity, adding one of the other guys that we signed, D. Rose, Chicago, born and bred like myself. There's a lot of optimism in Detroit, isn't there, J-Man?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we can hop right into Derrick Rose. It's like there's one half of the world who is sort of completely overestimating what he's going to bring. But there's the other half of the world who thinks that he's really not much of a difference from Ish Smith, which is crazy. I mean, with Derrick Rose, he's coming off his best season in a long time last year. Granted, he didn't play more than 50-something games, but apparently a lot of that was precautionary. And this is someone who can give you 25 minutes a night, maybe 30 on certain nights, but you don't want to push him too much more than that. But he can still give you 15 to 18 points a game, especially coming off the bench. Like, he's going to be, along with Luke Kennard, there's going to be a lot of scoring on that second unit that the Pistons haven't had in a long time. And Derrick Rose is someone who can close out games if Reggie's not playing well, or if Dwayne Casey wants to play them together.
And the thing about D. Rose is, you mentioned he's a closer, but what he also can give to in that limited time, let's say he just plays 22 minutes a game. In that 22 minutes, you can get that MVP-esque Derrick Rose performance. He doesn't have the explosiveness he once had, but he still has that scoring ability. He still has that drive and determination. And we saw it last year when he dropped that 50-plus point bucket game for the Timberwolves. Yeah. He still has it. It's just he doesn't have it all the time, and I think he's just learned how to manage his body. He's finally trust his body. What if he would have done what Kawhi did last year and, you know, trust his own body? 2 years ago, Kawhi said, you know what, I don't trust the Spurs. They misdiagnosed me. And he comes back 2 years later, which was this past season, he goes and wins an NBA championship. What if D. Rose just took a whole season off? What could his career have been had he just taken his own ailments and his own medical history and just said, you know what, I'm not ready yet? The NBA could be a completely different landscape if Derrick Rose doesn't force himself back and get those other injuries.
Yeah, it's true, but I mean, nothing against Kawhi, but I mean, like, you can just tell that Derrick just wants to be out there playing, which is why he sort of pushed himself, probably shouldn't have, but through all of the nonsense he was dealing with. But also, you know, with the Pistons, you have Arnie Kander, all-time guru at keeping players healthy, and has been, you know, a staple in the Pistons organization forever, which was incredible why they finally brought him back last season. And, you know, Reggie Jackson has attributed a lot of his health this past season. Reggie played 82 games last year after missing a ton of the previous two seasons. And I think, you know, pairing Derrick Rose with Arnie Kander is about to be a good old dynamic duo.
Does Arnie by any chance go to Germany, where our friend Kobe Bryant used to make visits every summertime to make himself feel better?
You know, I don't know that Arnie does. I think he brings Germany to the Pistons. But then you look at a guy, you know, another underrated addition is Tim Frazier, is the third string backup point guard. You know, between Reggie Jackson and Derrick Rose, there's going to be a decent amount of missed games, you know, whether it's injury, whether it's, you know, injury prevention, which I think that, you know, they should absolutely be dealing with a lot of those days. And Tim Frazier is someone who can be a really good backup point guard. And it's, I think the Pistons are very fortunate to have him because it's just more injury insurance. We're not dealing with a Jose Calderon or a Steve Blake, who's our third string point guard, who when someone gets hurt, they're thrown into the fire for a quarter of the season and completely ruin everything like Jose did last year. You know, I love Jose. I've always loved Jose. But holy damn, he should not have been playing this past season.
No, there's obviously sometimes a reputation can get you an extra year or two. Or sometimes your reputation in the retirement league can also bring you back to the NBA. And you can just tell, especially with point guards, it's a bigger difference. You can tell when the game passes them by, when they're not up to the speed of the NBA. And no offense to the Pistons, but there's a difference between the Pistons and Golden State and where they're playing and the speed of basketball they're playing. And when you're not able to play the speed of the Pistons, that tells you everything you need to know about old Jose and why he should probably go back to Spain, play for Barcelona, go and see the soccer games event over there as well. You know, go back home, be happy.
And rumors, he's like a billionaire already, so.
Absolutely. Gazillionaire.
You know, I'd say just, you know, I did see a report that he said he's down to wait till training camp to see if a deal comes along. And, you know, that's great. But, you know, last season just really wasn't it, Jose. But I still love him. I mean, I was really excited when the Pistons traded for him second half of the season, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. Because I loved it. Like, I always wanted the Pistons to grab him, you know, when he was in his prime. But
it is what it is.
When he plays for the Knicks on 2K, that's when I liked him.
You know, that that's not bad.
Always great on 2K. If you had him, like, as a bench guy, he'd get you, like, 15 points off the bench. Real life.
Oh, yeah.
He'd get you points to buy, you know, to save his life. But, hey.
Great 2K player.
Great 2K player.
Then you look at someone like Markieff Morris, another super underrated signing. I think the Pistons this summer, with no money, did a lot of good to bolster the bench. So you get Markieff Morris, who comes in, and he's someone who realistically could start some games and give Blake some nights off that he hasn't been able to just take leisurely in a long time.
And he's also a great guy. If the game gets a little bit chippy and you need to put somebody out there with veteran leadership who's had playoff experience, who's not afraid to get physical, especially in today's NBA where, no offense, but some of these guys are kind of soft. Markieff Morris is, I mean, he's a bad mamba jamba. And you know he's going to bring that Detroit workman's-like mentality. Bring your hard hat, bring your helmet, bring your lunch pail. Let's go and play some physical basketball.
Exactly. And he had pretty much the second half of the season was pretty much rehabbing from that weird neck injury he was dealing with. So as long as he's healthy, I really think he's going to be a super, possibly the most underrated signing this summer.
Even more so than the next man we might be talking about?
Well, the next man we're about to talk about, I think you're talking ISO Joe, coming hot out of the Big Three League, MVP. This is one of the most interesting things the Pistons have done this summer. Maybe I think it's actually the most interesting thing. I mean, you're talking about a guy who hasn't played in the NBA in a little bit, and his last season wasn't great.
6.7 points per game.
He's 38 years old now, but this man can still get buckets with anyone. Granted, you know, the anyone he's been playing have been 50, 60-year-old retired NBA players, but, I mean, scoring is something that, you know, will last you a long time. Look at Dirk Nowitzki. Look at Jamal Crawford. Granted, Jamal still got his quickness and handles for days. But I think with Joe Johnson, I mean, the Pistons are really thin on the wings still, you know, even with the Snell addition. Like, the Pistons just have a big rotation of small forwards that are really, are either going to be really mediocre or could be surprisingly really good. So you add him to the mix, it's going to be interesting. I don't know. I mean, can he give you 10, 15 minutes a night? Maybe not. Can he give you 8 to 10, you know, another 6, 7 points a night? I don't know. Is he going to be a closer? I don't know why he would be if he's not playing the rest of the game. It's a really weird signing. I will see how it plays out, but I understand.
I think bizarre is the best way to describe it. You know, the odd thing is that you mentioned him in the Big Three, and I was like, when I saw it, I was like, when I saw the rumors, right? Because as J-Man knows, he does his support groups, and I sometimes crash it in the middle of the night because I find myself hilarious on and to make myself laugh more than anything. I follow a decent amount of your Pistons fans and followers, Piston Thoughts, check them out. And there's some really cool people that you can interact there with. And there's just some of them that I follow because I wanted to see, you know, obviously more than Detroit Pistons. You know, you got the Lions, you got the Red Wings. So I wanted to follow some more Detroit people to see what was going on. And then I saw the rumblings coming from people about ISO Joe in like August. And I thought it was a joke, J-Man. I thought it was a joke. I thought people were messing with me. I was like, no way they're going to sign a guy that's playing basketball against Lamar Odom. That was the competition ISO Joe was going up against. Weirdest signing of the summer. Even weirder than the fact that Vince Carter decided to come back to Atlanta. Can we not give the man an NBA championship contender team? He could be the 13th man on the Lakers or something. The man deserves an NBA title.
Right, or at least go back to Toronto. I feel like that just makes too much sense.
He can do that the one-day contract and retire as a Raptor. Let's get the guy a championship.
Paul Pierce did that, right, with the Celts?
Yeah, he did the one-day contract, yeah. It's more of an NFL thing where they do, like, the one-day contract and they just go, hey, we're done.
True.
I mean, this kid, Dwayne, they did it for a whole season last year, so what am I supposed to know?
Well, and then you see reports of Dwayne Wade staying in shape this year just in case.
Just in case. I don't know for what, but just in case.
Rewind to the draft real quick, now that we're talking about Pistons small forwards. Pistons drafted Sekou Doumbouya with the number 15 pick, who I was really excited about. I still am. You're looking at an 18-year-old kid who just started playing basketball 4 years ago, who's a physical beast. You know, he can put on a little weight, but he's not Giannis thin. He reminds a lot of people of sort of a Siakam-type player. He's got skill. Again, youngest player in the draft. I mean, I don't know that he's going to contribute right now this year because we haven't really seen anything of him. But he's got a whole training camp coming up. He's got a whole preseason coming up. And you're looking at a coaching staff with Dwayne Casey and all of them who are really known for their development. And I think that, yeah, I mean, look what they did with Siakam. Look what they did with Fred VanVleet. Look what they turned Lowry and DeRozan into. I don't know, again, that he's going to contribute this year, but considering Joe Johnson and Sfea Mikhailiuk are pretty much the two players ahead of him in the rotation, he's going to get a chance to show himself.
Oh, absolutely, and especially with the Pistons maybe being a little bit more comfortable finishing eighth last season, fighting to the last days of the season to get into the playoffs. I know we may talk about it a little bit later or maybe in the next podcast, but I think there may be a little breathing room and maybe more opportunities to give the first overall pick an opportunity to get some more minutes this season because there is a better chance for the Pistons to maybe finish sixth or fifth in the Eastern Conference, maybe even higher, depending on how the season goes.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, next time we'll talk about sort of the questions and more predictions on specifically the Pistons. But, like, this season is going to be a whole lot of good or a whole lot of bad. I don't think there's any in between, because the thing is, it's like, if the Pistons are sort of teetering on mediocrity again or lower, it could be time to blow it up, which I'm never for, but, you know, with Andre Drummond maybe opting out, with Reggie's contract up, yada, 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 there's a lot of questions this year. But on the other hand, like you said, they can get off to a good start. You know, let's say Oladipo doesn't come back till Christmas and the Pacers are teetering down a little bit. Pistons play them 3 times in the first few weeks, so we got to jump on that. But if the Pistons get off to a good start, like you said, Sekou could maybe contribute. As long as he can play some good defense, get out in transition, and just finish, you know, this could be fun for him, and I'm really pumped to see him. He's like the first, granted, I don't know that it's going to turn into that, but he's really the first player we've drafted in a long time that, like, you could see him turning into a star.
Mm-hmm. Here's my question to you, J-Man.
Yeah.
How many teams are actually better as of this current moment are better than the Pistons, like roster-wise, team-wise?
Eastern Conference or NBA in total?
We're talking the Eastern Conference because, you know, I look at it, we definitely agree Miami probably gets the edge because they have that quote-unquote star. Miami's interesting, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
Possibility.
Yeah.
I mean
we'll,
Jimmy Butler.
We'll talk.
Jimmy Butler did definitely take a bunch of third stringers and embarrass, you know, Cat and Wiggins like it was none of his business.
How much is that saying, though?
And then he called up Rachel Nichols and said, "Hey, homie, you want to come out here? I got an interview for you." I mean, that takes some balls. That's the kind of leadership that, you know, Miami hasn't had in a long time. And
that's true. I'll give you that. But I don't know what's up with the rest of their team.
So Philly, Milwaukee, we'll just put maybe next to Miami. So we have Philly, Milwaukee. Do we put the Nets ahead of the Pistons? I know they got Kyrie, but they did lock up a quarter of their salary to KD, who's not going to be playing this season.
I'd say they're ahead. I give them the edge. I don't know. I mean, I think that they're gonna basically my top few teams. I go Milwaukee and Philly. I think Boston's gonna be up there. I think Indiana's gonna be really good.
I think Boston's stressed, man. I really do. I think the Al Horford. You know, Val Horford leaving to go to Philly, I think that really weakens them. I don't believe in their kids. I don't think Jaylen Brown's that good. I'm sorry. I watched them play. You know, everyone talk, "Oh, we made it to an Eastern Conference final without Kyrie." That's cool. You made it without him. What about with him? You guys did nothing. I mean, I don't want to be a hot take here, but I think Boston sports, you know, they've been a little fortunate with all their teams, and I'm so glad that they're going to suck so much this year. I don't even think they're going to make the playoffs.
Wow.
I think they're going to miss. I think they're 2 first-round picks. I think they're jokes, and I think they're bust, and I don't think they're that good. So.
Well, damn. All right, there's a take. I don't think they'll miss the playoffs. I totally agree that they've regressed. I mean, you don't lose Kyrie and Horford and, you know, I love Kemba. I think Kemba and Kyrie swap is going to be pretty even, at least for the regular season. I do think Kyrie's a better player, but I don't think you're going to see much of a drop off there in terms of production.
I think they're
going to
be exactly like Charlotte. They're going to be Charlotte, but in green. That's basically what this is. It's Charlotte in green. And you know, I like Kemba. I think consistency wise, you know what you're going to get. But Kyrie's a bad man, as Stephen A. would say. You can give him the ball, and he'll take the game winning shot and win you a chip.
You know, I'm not mad at that.
Look at what he did for Team USA, man. We lost. We didn't get no gold. We didn't get no bronze. We got no silver. We finished, what, 7th?
Yeah, it was tough.
This year? Yeah. And what was that? That was a Boston Celtics backcourt that messed it up for us. So, hot take, putting Kemba on the seat, putting Boston sports on the seat, on the hot seat. Guys are missing the playoffs. Detroit basketball, go finish higher than you.
Ooh, I like that.
5-10 games, the Pistons look better record.
Ooh, I like these takes now. But I will say, Gordon Hayward is the massive X factor there, because if he can go back to sort of close to what he used to give Utah, you know, and that's only 2 seasons removed. It's not like a crazy thing. But if he can do that, then, you know, that puts Jaylen Brown or Tatum, if they are desperate, on the trade block to upgrade somewhere else. I can see them getting out of it. But yeah, I guess right now, definitely regressed. I don't think they missed the playoffs, but I'll take your take.
They'll finish 9th. They'll finish damn 9th, and obviously Charlotte, Orlando, I think they're definitely behind the Pistons. I think the Pistons got better. They added in areas that will.
Thank you. I need you to repeat that because we have been arguing with Orlando Magic fans and a bunch of people. There are so many record predictions that say Orlando Magic like 8 games ahead of the Pistons.
Yeah, man, you want to tell everybody where I currently live at?
This dude is in Orlando right now.
I don't know any Orlando Magic fans. I drive past the stadium. Hold on, I remember during the season, you could drive past their stadium. Be on the expressway going past their stadium as well. And there ain't no traffic, so I don't know where these Magic fans are at because I don't even know if they exist. My subdivision, there's more, you know, Laker fans, there's more Knicks fans. I'm surprised there's even Knicks fans anymore when you can't even sign the two players that said they're going to come join your team. Then they go across the river over the borough and go to Brooklyn. No one plays for Brooklyn. But now they do because they're a damn disgrace, the New York Knicks. And there's no Magic fans. Obviously, there's a lot of excitement. They got that one win over Toronto. I mean, they can hang that in as a banner up in the ceiling. I mean, the problem with Orlando is, I get it, they're the odd makers. They want to make them these underdogs that potentially could be sneaky good. I don't see it. Do they got point guards? Do they got a better point guard than the Pistons? No. And where do you win NBA basketball games? In your backcourt. I don't think their backcourt is better than the Pistons.
I totally agree with you. I mean, I understand because they finished last season pretty strong. You know, they got their Toronto win. But everyone keeps being like, oh, yeah, like Jonathan Isaac and Mo Bamba and just the internal development's going to be crazy. And I'm like, you could say the same thing about literally every NBA team. Even the Pistons. I haven't brought up the internal development once. You know, Luke Kennard, Bruce Brown. There's a lot of fun coming out of Detroit. But you can't bank on that. You know, you can hope for that. And you can talk about how Casey's staff is really good at internal development. But you can't bank on that. You know, and it's like the Orlando fans who they finished a game ahead of the Pistons. You know, realistically, if the Pistons didn't totally spiral after last season, you know, if 2 games went differently, Pistons were in the 6th spot instead of 8. Orlando's in 8. And I just don't get it. But a lot of odds makers and Orlando fans on Twitter, at least, that's where they exist, are like, oh yeah, like Orlando's going to win 45, Pistons 37. I'm like, what? How? In what world are the Magic going to win 8 more games than the Pistons? Unless the Pistons blow it up. Then I could see that. But that's not going to happen.
Do you think it's also because the fact that the Magic had the good end of the season run, and obviously injuries to Blake hurt the Pistons towards the end? If they were, I mean, obviously his injury was very, everyone knows when you lose your star player, the injury at the end of the season, and the Magic go on this like great run. What was it like? Was it 13 wins in the last like 2 months or like 6 weeks of the season? They went on some really good run that was like very Orlando-esque. And, you know, you can, if a team starts the season, let's say the Pistons start the season, they go like 13-7 to start the season. You know, everyone's like, oh, what a great
start.
They
did.
But if you end the season like that, you end the season 13-7, everyone thinks, oh, they've taken the step up. They've advanced. They've done this. They've done that. Everyone's excited. And it's like, well, the Pistons went on that same run. It just happened at a different time in the season. I think it's just people want to build that hype up because they want people that are gamblers to gamble on Orlando so they lose money on Orlando. Because if you think they're going to win 45 games, where's your weed? Where's your meth? Where's your crack? Please take it, flush it down the toilet because you are damaging my brain cells right now. 45 wins for Orlando. Are these people crazy?
I mean, it's crazy. It's like, it wouldn't be insane if they won 45 games, but the fact that you say that they're going to win 45 and Pistons win 37 or whatever it is, like, no.
No, absolutely not.
But also, I mean, just looking back at last season, it's like a lot of the Pistons' losses came when Jose Calderon was your primary backup point guard for 23 games in the year, whatever it was. I mean, when Ish went down, Pistons fell off the rails, and that's why it's huge to bring in Derrick Rose, but more importantly, Tim Frazier. And Pistons have sort of groomed Bruce Brown in the summer league to sort of play some point guard if he needs to. He handled the ball really well, made some plays. Pistons, for the first time in a long time, actually have some point guard depth, which is very relieving.
Mm-hmm. And being able to rotate them, obviously, some of them can play the two as well, which is going to be very beneficial as well. If they progress to the level that the Pistons need them to progress, then they're going to be in a position where you're going to have a lot of young athletic you know, 1-2 combinations, and the more speed that you have, man, you'll be in a big, huge, positive place to be at, especially in this NBA.
Yeah, and I was looking, Dwayne Casey actually did a Q&A the other day, and he was saying, and something sort of like you were saying, like when Blake went down, Pistons also fell off the rails, obviously. Mainly because all season the Pistons ran like 90% of their offense through Blake Griffin. So he goes down and you don't know when he's going to play. Like, you have no one doing anything because no one knows what's going on. But he was saying, Dwayne Casey was saying, this year going to be diversifying the offense, putting the ball in Reggie's hands more. Dre's going to make some plays off the bench. Luke Kennard, Derrick Rose, Bruce Brown. It's going to be better this year. And I don't know why everyone's saying that the Pistons are going to do worse. I just don't understand.
So my question to you is this. You mentioned Dre. What is the ceiling for the Pistons with him, and what's their ceiling without him? Like, does he make that much of a significant difference, especially in today's NBA? Does he make that big of a difference? Because he struggles to stretch the floor. Because I feel like there's going to be times where Blake Griffin may be put at the five and they may go small, and that could be an opportunity for the Pistons to make up ground against teams. We look at Golden State, we look at what Cleveland would do, we look at what the Lakers will possibly do with Anthony Davis. He doesn't like playing the five, but if LeBron says, go play the five, we need to go small to go get some points, they're going to go small and pick up some points, even though that Anthony Davis isn't really that small. But you know what I mean? If you go small and put him at five, Blake Griffin, I mean, that's a team that has a hell of a lot of upside, Blake Griffin at the five playing small.
The problem with that is yes, but the reason that works for Golden States and the Clevelands of the world is because they have Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, LeBron James. They have super superstars. Granted, Blake is a superstar, but he's not all-time LeBron James talent, all-time Steph Curry talent, stuff like that. But to answer your question, I think it's really close. It really depends, because Drummond has gotten so much better throughout this past season as a rim protector, as a help side defender. And, you know, I don't ever think that he's necessarily going to be a threat from beyond the arc. But you never know. You look at Marcus Gasol, Jonas Valanciunas, you look at Brook Lopez. Those are big men who developed a shot later in their careers. But I think, you know, if you can find a way, like the Pistons were doing with Stan Van Gundy, to utilize Drummond in the pick and roll scenarios and dribble handoffs that he's gotten so much better with, he can be dominant. I mean, a couple years ago, at the start of the 15-16 season, he literally, I was comparing him to Shaq, just the way he was dominating the game. Granted, different time, but it's like, if he could play like that and he can utilize his size and his strength, he can dominate on a nightly basis. But without him, you know, you can't replace his production, because he's going to be possibly the best rebounder in NBA history. He gives you so many second chance opportunities, but you can get by with a JaVale McGee type center, just a center, sort of a rim runner who can protect the rim. You can get by with that as long as you upgrade elsewhere.
I think what could also be a very interesting lineup combination would be, you could put Blake at the five and you could put Morris at the four. And then you have that good rebounding, good veteran leadership with Morris, who's physical, who can get those rebounds. And then you have Blake, who's tall enough, who can stretch the floor. And that just opens up more space for one Reggie Jackson, and more space for one Derrick Rose. And could you imagine all that open space for Derrick Rose? Oh, running at the rim with no one around. Oh.
When's the last time Derrick Rose had a good pick and roll big? Like, I mean, Joakim Noah was good, but he wasn't the threat on the lob that Dre is.
Boozer
was, you know, like a mini pick and pop guy, I guess. But, I mean, has Derrick Rose ever really had a big that can pick and roll like Drummond?
No, not to my recollection. And I know that there's so many people that are in the NBA Twitter right now that's probably saying, that guy, you don't remember that guy? Well, if we remembered them, we would have said them now, wouldn't we?
That's a great point.
No, it's just, I can't recall at all, especially in those great Bulls teams. It was more, they were physical, they grind you out. Derrick Rose took over the game. Joakim Noah, I mean, it's so weird when we say he spread the floor, but he was only going like 15 feet away from the basket. It's crazy,
yeah, exactly.
It's crazy what basketball was in 2011 to what it is in 2019 going into the new decade of 2020. How much the game has changed. 2011, Andre Drummond is probably getting a Supermax contract at that point.
Oh, yeah.
Max money. 8 years later, they're trying to make players like that obsolete, which is just the absolute crazy thing of the transition. But you never know. It's like ebbs and flows. If Drummond can develop that three-point shot or develop a consistent, you know, three-throw number, he'll be getting rebound after rebound against smaller lineups and smaller lineups, and then you got to play big, and that's where the Pistons could dominate. It's if he's consistent, yeah. He goes up that next run on that talent and on the offensive side. Oh, good Lord. The Pistons could be a 45-win team easily if he can develop all that extra stuff in his game.
I mean, the crazy thing is, it's like the Pistons won 41 games last year, and we've talked about the Ish Smith injury for 25 games. We talked about Blake the end of the season. It's like, what? Like, if that doesn't happen, they're a 50-win team. And they've upgraded their bench this year. Granted, again, a lot can go wrong. I get that. But, like, if you're talking about consistency, they brought back their core. They've bolstered their bench. They have another year under Casey. They have healthy off seasons for Reggie, for Derrick Rose, for Blake, for everybody. I mean, this is set up to be potentially a really fun season that nobody thinks is going to happen.
You know, there's a lot to be had, right? It's either, as you mentioned earlier in the podcast, it's either going to end up being really, really good for the Pistons, or it could end up being really, really bad for the Pistons. There's really no in with what this team is able to achieve. If they achieve a very high level of success, oh boy, these guys are going to be one of the teams that people are going to be gambling on towards the end of the season. They're going to be a league pass team, as people like to call it. Or they're going to end up being that, it's like, did they hang on to these pieces way too long? Could be one of those scenarios too, but there's just a lot of positives with them going forward, hopefully.
But that will do it for this week's Pistons Thoughts. We're back, and we're back on a schedule. Next time, we'll have a nice little what are we going to watch for training camp. We'll get ready for the season. This is going to be fun, hopefully. Cross your fingers. Knock on wood. Tyler, thanks for hanging, and we will see you guys next week.